morning. Our first case this morning is Impresa Cubana v. General Cigar. Mr. Goldstein.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, David Goldstein on behalf of the appellant Impresa Cubana del Tabaco, or Cuba Tobacco. The central dispute in this case concerns what the Second Circuit decided in its 2004 decision, what we refer to in our briefs as Impresa 5, which I'll probably refer to as Impresa 5.
Can I ask you a question at the outset? And I appreciate there are a lot of questions about what the Second Circuit decided and didn't decide and what you might have argued to them and didn't argue and all of that. But can you try to separate these two things for me at the outset? And that is the question of statutory standing from the question of constitutional standing. Most of the arguments about standing here seem to have been framed in terms of what's required under the Lanham Act. But for you to come here, not to go to the TTAB, but for you to come here, you need constitutional standing, a concrete stake in something that we can somehow do something for you about. Can you describe what that is?
Okay, sure. And that we had a large section in our opening brief, which I actually don't think is necessary to establish either standing before the board, which is statutory standing, or a separate standing in front of the Federal Circuit, because I think the issue is really whether there's statutory standing before the board. But we did that not because we need to prove that or show that for standing, but we put in a section what we might call the real-life interests. And the point of that was the board's decision, which seemed so at odds with its precedents, seemed to have departed from that. Without saying it, seemed to have just assumed we can't do anything. We're here for sort of an intellectual exercise, advisory opinion, a futile argument. And the situation we're in is really not that different than the situation of any petitioner who's seeking to cancel a registration. The issues are unique, and they're complicated, and they're novel, but we're in the same situation as a party that comes in and the registrant says, you have no standing. If you have standing, there's a procedural barrier or a preclusion barrier. Even if you get past that, you have a substantive barrier on the merits. But if you get past that, you still have to establish in front of the board that you're entitled to a registration.
Right, let me just try to focus.
Okay,
this
I'm
more.
Sorry.
You can't sell your product here. What concrete stake do you have in whether somebody else is using the name of the product?
Okay. The foreign policy of the United States has set out in the CACR and in the 1996 OFAC policy letter is that Cuban parties who cannot use their marks in the United States are authorized to register their marks here, and there's maybe a couple of hundred Cuban marks registered here in the United States. The reciprocal is that although U.S. companies under the U.S. embargo cannot use their marks in Cuba, U.S. companies are allowed to register their marks in Cuba, and about maybe 6,000 U.S. marks are registered in Cuba. And the point of that is the government is essentially saying, we're going to protect each party's intellectual property in contemplation of the end of the embargo, so that if that situation arises, those Cuban parties can exercise the rights that they would have based on their registration.
Is that all it is? Or if you get a mark registered here as a Cuban company, can you go and get a special license to pursue a trademark infringement?
Yeah, I mean, for example, we just...
Does that happen?
I brought a case in the Eastern District of Michigan. We own the mark, Cuba Tobacco owns the mark La Casa del Habano, which is retail stores and cigar mark for Cuban cigars around the world. And a company opened in Michigan called La Casa de la Habana or something. And we brought a proceeding in that court. And it didn't go to judgment. It resolved itself. And we've done that in other... We did that in the third District Court of New Jersey for a mark called, Puro Habano. So,
and those
yes.
are all under special licenses that allow you to pursue those actions?
To go into federal court, we need a special license, although since this case was brought, there's been a change in the CACR so that a Cuban party can go into court without a license. The attorneys need a license to get paid, special license to get paid, but they changed that rule to allow enforcement of a right. So a trademark right, and in fact the government says...
So even if you can't use your mark here, you can get somebody else's mark...
Enjoined. Yeah, under Section 32 of the Act, a party with a registration can stop another party from using that mark if that mark is similar to confusingly similar.
I'm sorry, I just want to be clear about it. You can do that even without a special license, is that right?
With the registration, under the new general license of the CACR, you can initiate a litigation. In 1997, we needed and got a specific license to commence the federal action. We had the general license of CACR. I know it's complicated. We had the license.
What's the new provision of the CACR that allows?
I think it's 512, but I might be wrong.
What I just understood you to say is that there's now a general license that authorizes your company, if you have a registration, to go to court without further legal permission.
It's not if I have a registration, if it's to enforce or protect a right. It's a general license beyond the trademark authorization.
Does that include going to court to sue somebody for infringement of your trademark without further permission?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
I want to be really clear about what I'm.
No, I understand.
What I'm concerned about. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of a case, and maybe you can give me one, in which a party comes to federal court, as you are now doing here,
right,
and says, my interest is in doing something that the law otherwise forbids, and therefore, even if you give me some an order in my favor, I'm still forbidden to do the thing that I have a stake in. And I want to know, is that a description of this situation or not a description?
No, I'm sorry. It's not for several reasons. The first reason is that what we're asking for is a board cancellation order. That's authorized. We're asking you to give us the authority to go back to the board to seek cancellation. That's authorized. We're also asking, subsequent to the board cancellation order, to get a registration. That's authorized. That's authorized under the general license. With the registration, we believe we can do two possible things. If the embargo is lifted, we can sell. We have a registration. General Cigar might oppose us, and we'll battle over who has priority, whether they have unclean hands, whether they got there first. And the second thing is, we might, with a registration, be able to go into a federal court that's recognized the well-known marks doctrine and argue, again, now that we have a registration, which the government says is the way we obtain our trademark rights, which is what the Impressive Five said, is the only way you can obtain trademark rights, we would then go into federal court. So it's speculative in the sense that we don't know the answer.
If the embargo doesn't allow you to do the latter, if we conclude it doesn't allow you to do the latter, does the former give you constitutional standing here?
The former,
you said two things. The former was you just register the mark and you wait for the embargo to go. Is the denial of your procedural rights at the trademark board sufficient to give you constitutional standing here?
Yes, because we have a concrete interest. Under constitutional Article 3 standing, we have a concrete injury, which is that we can't register our mark because we can't cancel their mark because the board said we have no standing. And the remedy, the relief for that, is we will be able to register our mark. And that registration is not an abstract proposition. It's not, I think we used this in the Michigan case, it's not a worthless piece of paper. It has to have value. Otherwise, the U.S. foreign policy wouldn't be designed to protect this reciprocal intellectual property. Or if it was designed to do it, it wouldn't be carrying out that that reciprocal protection.
Now, you stayed the TTAB action so that you could go to the district court and then on to the Second Circuit.
Correct.
Didn't turn out well for you. Now you want to go back. Should we see any inconsistency in those positions?
No, because what happened was we went and sought to cancel the mark at a time when General Cigar was basically barely selling. The district court addressed that issue. We had a different, took a cigar called Temple Hall, put a Cohiba band on it, sold a few of them. We went to the TKB to get cancel that and get a registration. They then did a massive national launch. They were, big launch. We can't get an injunction from the TKB, so we went to federal court to get an injunction. In the federal court, we also asked for cancellation relief. If we hadn't, if we tried to come back here, they would probably be arguing that it was a required element or, transactionally barred under claim preclusion. They did not raise the CACR defense at that time. They waited 7 years to raise it. So It wasn't an election to go to federal court. We were stuck in federal court. What happened in federal court was instead of addressing the merits at the Second Circuit, instead of General Spahr arguing the merits, they said, we have the district court can't grant the relief that it ordered. So they won on that. So the district court can't, the Second Circuit said that the acquisition of the ability to enjoin them and the acquisition of the ability to cancel their registrations is a right, privilege, and power to my clients, which is a property transfer. We argued that wasn't correct. The government argued that wasn't correct. But we lost on that. We're not challenging that. They then said, is there an authority for the district court to transfer that property, transfer to give us the registration cancellation power? And the court said, no, there's a limitation on judicial authority. There's no license authorizing the district court to do something that winds up with us having a property right.
There's a implicit in my question is the sense that you may be seeking a second bite at the apple. But did you get the first bite?
It's definitely a first bite because the Impressa 5 said we can't get that bite. 7 years after we brought the action, they argued we can't get that bite, and the court agreed. You're in the wrong place to get that bite. The district court is unauthorized. There's two parts. Is it a property transfer? Yes. We thought no. The government thought no, but they said yes. Second, it's unauthorized. There's a limitation on judicial authority. There is no judicial authority to cancel that registration. But there is board authority under 515.527 and the OFAC ruling. The OFAC ruling we sought, our law firm sought, before we brought the Cuba tobacco case, the Cohiba case.
This is
case.
The August 1996 letter?
Yeah, the 1996 letter. We put in the record in 1997. That was the basis for us seeking cancellation. We put in the record on summary judgment. General Spahr, for some reason, says we don't have that license. Of course we do. It's a general license. Every Cuban party has that license. General Spahr acknowledges that that license eliminates the barrier to standing. It cites the three cases that I've won or we've won in the board on behalf of Cuban parties in which the board explicitly said we have standing and cited to the OFAC policy letter in 527. General Spahr says, well, that eliminated the bar of standing in those cases, but you don't have that license. Well, of course we do. We got it for this case. We filed it in 1997. I think it's a 742 maybe of the appendix is the original filing, and 483 is the filing
the
of this
letter.
What's that?
483 is the August letter.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I also put in response to General Spahr, towards the back of the appendix, the same letters that we put in on behalf of the other Cuban cigar company, Corporación Habanos, in two different cases. So that it's the exact same letter because it is a general license. All Cuban parties who want to seek cancellation of a mark in contemplation of their registering their own mark or to protect their own interest in the mark have that right. So we have that right. General Spahr says eliminates the barrier to standing. I don't see anything wrong with that statement by General Spahr. So if we can cancel, then the board, the Impressa 5 never held the board can cancel, never addressed it, wasn't relevant, wasn't before them. If we can go before the board, we have a right to get a trademark registration if we can cancel. Under 44E, Section 44E, which allows a foreign party to get a registration based on its Cuban mark. So we would be going in on that basis. And if we get that registration, we will be in a novel situation in the federal courts. And the board certainly has no authority.
Can I ask on the I'm sorry. My correct me on the details or maybe even the general point, but my understanding is that for you to get a registration based on the foreign mark, you need to have a bona fide intent to use or some language
yes.
like that. Currently, you can't use
right.
it. Is there some case law, and maybe you cite it and then you just remind me, that says the bona fide intent to use, which I guess lapses after 6 years, is present even if you're legally forbidden to use it?
Yes, because at the 5-6 year mark, we have to file a statement of use or a statement of excusable non-use. And I maybe 50 times, I mean, I might be exaggerating, 30, 40, 50
non-use.
Times, the board, the PTO has granted excusable non-use, extended the registration. We've renewed lots and lots of registrations okay. based on that. We definitely have a bona fide intent to use, what the Cubans do. They're in the Caribbean. They have the premier cigars in the world. Their Cohiba, which is why we're fighting, is considered their most prestigious cigar. The U.S. market is huge. Several of the board cases that found standing talk about how we've shown that the Cubans actually plan their strategies based on that. They advertise in U.S. cigar magazines. They advertise in English language magazines. They do interviews. Cigar Aficionados, which we relied on a lot to prevail in the district court, does lots of interviews on Cuban cigars. So the Cuban cigar entities are always putting the Cuban cigars in front of the U.S. consumer in contemplation of the end of the embargo. Until the U.S. foreign policy changes,
Is it only in contemplation of that, or is there a cognizable interest in your getting Americans who travel to countries where you can sell your cigars to want them when they get there to Paris or wherever?
I mean, there's nothing in the record about that. The district court made no findings about that. The Cubans certainly, the registrations of the marks and the battles we've brought, 25 proceedings in the TTB, several in the courts, to protect those registrations are irrelevant to selling cigars overseas. So that activity is certainly in contemplation.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein.
I see I'm into my
You've consumed your time. We'll restore your rebuttal time and give Mr. Deutsch an extra 3 minutes if he needs it.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Andrew Deutsch, representing the Appellee General Cigar Company. This litigation is 17 years old. It went through the federal courts at the election of Cuba Tobacco, who could have otherwise had the issues of a cancellation determined by the TTAB. The Second Circuit issued a definitive ruling that General Cigar's registration was valid, and that Cuba Tobacco's attempted cancellation, if granted, would be something that was prohibited by the Cuban asset regulations. The fundamental flaw in Cuba Tobacco's argument today is to mischaracterize the Second Circuit as saying something about what the district court can or can't do as opposed to what the board can or can't do. What the Second Circuit did was to interpret the Cuban asset regulations. And that interpretation is as applicable if a cancellation is pursued before the board as if it is pursued in federal court.
Well, the TTAB seems to say there's no standing because of preclusion in the Second Circuit, and yet they really don't do a standard preclusion analysis. Is that something we ought to send back to them to take a look at?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. First, I think, is the point I just said. It's a 17-year-old litigation. Second, the issue of preclusion was argued below. Third, it's purely a question of law. And fourth, there really is no question about preclusion. The parties are the same. The claims are the same. We have in the appendix a comparison of the claims in the petition against the claims.
Well, but let me just ask you this. I mean, how could it possibly be the case, tendentious form of question, that the Second Circuit, that whatever the Second Circuit said, that it was necessary to its decision to declare anything about the power of the board, which simply wasn't in front of it?
The Second Circuit didn't say anything about the power of the board. What the Second Circuit did was to determine what the effect of the Cuban asset regulations are. The board's power to cancel and the federal court's power to cancel are identical.
Well, I guess I'm not sure how we know that. The Second Circuit didn't say that, and the board doesn't seem to at least have squarely addressed the question whether the transfer language of the regulations applies equally to the court and the board. At a minimum, it doesn't seem to me that the Second Circuit, A, decided it, and B, even if it decided it, it couldn't possibly have been necessary to its judgment.
Well, I don't agree with you, Honor. First of all, they did decide it. The court determined that the cancellation of General's duly registered mark and would have been was a transfer of property to Cuban National in violation of the regulations. It didn't say by a board or by a court because it referred to the remedy of cancellation, which is, and there's plenty of precedent, including precedent from this court, an identical power vested both in the TTAB and in the federal courts. A determination that a cancellation, whoever does it, is a violation of the Cuban embargo is binding on the board when the same parties and the same claims are presented. It's true the board didn't get to that point. The board decided that the case fails on the threshold issue of standing. We have argued it, and if the court were to go past standing, we think you would have to determine that there was preclusion on the grounds that the Second Circuit raised. But I'll address standing if you'd like us to focus on that, because I don't think much was talked about that in the opening argument. The second, the TTAB is acting consistently with its precedents in saying that there is a lack of standing. Pardon me.
So are you saying,
yes.
Let's assume that this whole 17-year litigation didn't exist,
right,
and Cuba Tobacco had just gone to the board and tried to register its mark, got the blocky notice, and then tried to cancel your mark. Are you saying that under the regulations in place, they wouldn't have standing to do that?
I would say if there had never been a litigation before, I don't know how the board would have approached standing. The Second Circuit didn't deny that there was standing, and we would assume that if they're standing in federal court, there may well be standing in the TTAB. I think it would have failed on the next ground, which is the interpretation of the regulations. But of course, we are bound by the Second Circuit determination.
So you're saying that even without the preclusive effect, Cuba Tobacco can't go to the board and try to get General Cigar's mark canceled?
If you take away, if you make the last 17 years of history vanish, which is what you're asking to do, then we would have to make the arguments in front of the board that we had made in front of the federal court, because we would not have preclusion.
Is there, we were addressing a moment ago a distinction between the court and the TTAB. Is there a distinction in the express statutory grant of ability to get a registration and to seek cancellation of a registration?
The power to cancel is in two separate portions of the Lanham Act between the TTAB and the federal court, but the case law has said these are the same power. They've said the reason that 1119 exists is because if you go to federal court, you can get both injunctive relief and cancellation relief, which is more efficient. And that's exactly what Cuba Tobacco did. They went to where they could apply for the full relief, and they were turned down on both grounds. Now, to turn back to the TTAB, make a false distinction with respect to what the Second Circuit ruled and say we're now entitled to re-argue the same issues all over again because the Second Circuit obviously didn't say anything about what the board can do is a misreading of the decision, which is all about what the Cuban asset regulations hold.
Can I ask you another? It seems to me that there are at least two possible open issues with respect to whether the cancellation request is barred. One is this possible difference between the court and the TTAB doing it. The other is a possible difference between or among different grounds for cancellation, so that, for example, if the other side was arguing for cancellation because, say, you abandoned the property right, one could possibly think of that as a situation in which nothing is actually being transferred from you to them, whereas maybe other grounds are different. And you had somewhat, and the board didn't explore the any possible differences with respect to the regulations, the Cuban asset control regulations, among different grounds. Are we missing some analysis that might be relevant to?
I do not think so. As I said earlier, each one of the grounds raised in the petition were raised in federal court. They are identical. I don't believe we're getting a dispute from Cuba Tobacco on that issue. Under the Second Circuit's analysis and under the accepted view of what benefits a registration confers on a registrant, there is clearly a deprivation of property to the benefit of Cuba Tobacco, no matter what the grounds of cancellation are. My client loses the prima facie evidence of registrability, validity, the right to have its mark declared incontestable, and all the other benefits that a registrant has over an ordinary user.
Well, if that's the case,
yes,
then the logical following out of your argument is no Cuban company can go to the board and try to get a mark canceled, because that would in essence be a transfer of property.
I believe that is the consequence of this. I believe
so
that is a logical consequence.
So you believe that the regulations bar a cancellation action by Cuban companies?
I believe the Second Circuit was right, and the answer is yes. The Second Circuit, by the way...
Has the board ever addressed that question?
The board has not addressed that question.
It sounds like the board has processed at least registration applications. I don't know if they've had cancellation action.
Well, there's a distinction, a real meaningful distinction, between the license in the regulations that allows a Cuban entity to register a mark, which doesn't deprive someone else of a property right, and there may be power to cancel a registration, which does. The only thing that the general license in the Cuban regulations does is it allows a Cuban entity to register a mark. And my adverse counsel described that. But the logic of the Second Circuit decision, which is at least binding on these parties, I can't say what the board might say in a different case, is that a cancellation is a transfer of property, which the embargo regulations forbid.
And that I guess the Second Circuit said that the August 1996 letter from Treasury, which I guess everybody's treating as a special license, is procedural only and not in any way substantive.
That's right. The government filed an amicus brief, which is in the record in the Second Circuit, essentially arguing that that letter authorized Cuba Tobacco to undertake a cancellation of General Cigar's mark. And the Second Circuit rejected that view. The Second Circuit said that the embargo is broad and the exceptions are very narrow and they don't comprise...
Suppose we didn't think that the Second Circuit's pronouncement on that was binding. Why in the world would the government's view of the content of its special license not be effectively determinative?
Well, it's never effectively determinative. It is the most persuasive, I would think, under the circumstances.
Well, why? No, I mean, it has power to grant special licenses. You may do the following transfers. If the government says, this is what we meant in this letter, how is that not effectively determinative?
I don't know that I'm prepared to fully re-argue this issue that it was decided by the Second Circuit. But I would say that there is a meaningful distinction, the one I just raised, between what the regulations permit, which is registration and renewal, and the cancellation of it. I think we would argue to the board that that is not, the government's interpretation is not binding.
But these are the government's regulations, and this is the part of the government charged with administering these regulations under normal deference principles. Don't we defer to their interpretation?
You defer, but you don't. They say that's the last word. And there are a number of federal court decisions saying, although we defer to the government, this can't be sustained under a plain reading of the regulations.
Yes,
that's essentially what the Second Circuit
says. It has
said.
To be plainly inconsistent with the language of the regulation,
well,
right?
The Second Circuit.
Where is it plainly inconsistent?
It's plainly inconsistent with...
I understand your argument about the preclusive effect of the Second Circuit.
Right.
I think what I'm interested in is whether that's right.
We can
deal with whether the Second Circuit meant that or not. I just don't see in the regulations where Cuban companies don't have the right to seek cancellation as part of their right, which I think you don't dispute, that they can register their mark.
Well, I think they're two entirely separate rights, and most particularly...
Where in the regulations and the embargo regulations would you point to suggest that they can't do that?
I would point to the language itself related to the registration or renewal of marks, which is the applicable language. Cancellation is not in itself related to the registration of a mark.
But in a circumstance such as this, where you have two parties seeking to register the same mark, aren't they inextricably tied?
I guess I have to go back to the beginning. The interpretation of the Second Circuit is that there is a broad, and I believe it's correct, and I would argue this in front of the board or this court, where the issue being raised fresh, is that there is a broad prohibition and that the exceptions have to be read narrowly. That is consistent with the purpose of the embargo, which is to prohibit Cubans from benefiting from the United States.
But if the government reads the exception to cover a cancellation proceeding, where in the language does it specifically bar a cancellation
It does not specifically bar it.
Well, then, doesn't, under a deference principle, it gives the government the power to do that. If it's silent, the government can fill in the gaps. And unless they're plainly inconsistent, which it doesn't seem they are, we defer to that.
I recognize the principles of deference under this circumstance, but the court, I think this court, where it's come before the issue for the first time, would also have to take into account not only the broad principles of the embargo, but the fact that Congress reauthorized it in the Libertad Act of 1996.
If just looking at the broad policy considerations here, if Cohiba isn't protected here, does that mean that Coca-Cola and McDonald's are going to be subject to appropriation by a Cuban corporation on the island?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously the Cubans confiscated a great many trademarks over the history of the Castro regime.
That kind of justifies us doing the same, is that what you're saying?
Since 2006, as far as I'm aware, there's been no retaliatory action taken because of this decision. So the idea that there is a policy impact from the court, from either the Second Circuit decision or affirming what the TTAB has done, seems to me to be minimal.
Okay, can you clarify something for me? And that has to do with the nature of this August 1996 letter. And the question is that in fact itself a special license, or is it, as its language suggests more than that, that it is a piece of advice about the meaning of the general license? It's written as to say, here's what we think 527, the general license, authorizes. Is Treasury independently authorized to say, doesn't matter what 527 authorizes, we have power in our discretion to grant you permission to go and effectuate a cancellation?
I have not been, if you will, prepared to get deeply into the weeds of the CACR. There is a power vested in the Treasury of granting special licenses. Whether and to what extent it's bounded by exceptions or by language in the Enabling Act that doesn't allow it to grant certain special licenses, I'm really not equipped to say. I apologize for not being clear on that point. I would conclude by saying we believe that indeed the ruling of the TTAB should be affirmed on standing grounds, because Cuba Tobacco, under the Second Circuit, it's a fact they can't sell their cigars here, but under the Second Circuit ruling, they cannot acquire priority rights over my client's registration. Remember, most of the fighting here is about the first Cohiba registration. I'm sorry, Your Honor, do you have a question?
Yeah. Castro dies tomorrow and the whole prohibition goes away. How does that change all this?
It doesn't change all this. My client would still have had the benefit of a vested final federal judgment that declares that it has prior rights in the market. So were Cuba Tobacco to come in and say, okay, the embargo's over, the 2D would still stand as a barrier to its being able to register the market. It would be in the same position as other applicants. There would already be a registered mark held by someone else on the principal register. If the courts have no further questions, I will sit down.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Deutsch. Mr. Goldstein, we restored your 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Just to clarify or address a couple of points, the Second Circuit never addressed the 1996 OFAC policy.
Are you aware of any proceedings at the board where Cuban companies try to cancel marks as opposed to just register marks?
Yes, there was the Ancus decision, which we cite, the Guantanamera decision, which we cite, the CNEX decision, which we cite. Those were all oppositions. We brought a series of cancellations. Actually, one of them is pending before the board now. In those three oppositions, which are procedurally the same standing as the same.
Has the board ever suggested that the embargo prevents Cuban companies from trying to cancel marks because that would be a transfer of property?
No, and it wouldn't say that because it's not a, it's a transfer of property under Impressa 5, but it's not in violation of the embargo because it's related to the registration of a mark under the policy letter. And what Section 201 of the CACR provides is all of the following transactions are prohibited unless authorized by the Secretary through regulations, which is the CACR, or by rulings, instructions, licenses, or otherwise. So the 1996 letter is either a ruling or it's an otherwise, but it's an interpretation of the general license, and it's entitled to the strongest possible deference because it's the agency interpreting its own regulation in an area of national security and foreign policy.
So you don't view that letter as going beyond interpreting the 527 general license to itself be a specific license?
It's not a specific license within the meaning of the regulations.
Okay.
It's a general it's an interpretation of a general license applicable to all Cuban parties cited in the three board decisions we cite in our brief, which I mentioned, in which they say, and just to be, the board says, and just to be perfectly clear, just because the Cuban parties can't sell in the United States does not mean they don't have standing. See the 515.527 and their interest in either getting a registration or protecting a mark in which they have an interest. In this case, our property interest, and that's one place where the board is completely wrong, where it says we have no property interest, where the Second Circuit said we have no property interest. We have a trademark application. Under Lipton, that's a legitimate commercial interest, so under this board's precedent, that's an interest. And certainly under the CACR, that's an interest. The trademark application is a thing of value. We could not acquire that without Section 515.527 because it's clearly a piece
there's
of
some
property,
really broad
and we
language.
Clearly have it.
There's some really broad language in the Second Circuit's decision that it seems like is the real stumbling block for you in this case, and it's that General Cigar's legal right to the Cohiba mark has been established against Cuba Tobacco. If that's a definitive conclusion that they have their mark over you, then why doesn't that mean you have no standing and you have no interest in going forward?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that because I had hoped to get to that earlier, and I see I'm over my time, but
please answer.
It's critical to understanding every time that the court addresses General Cigar's ownership, they do it in the context of their antecedent CACR ruling. So in the context in which a federal court cannot cancel or enjoin their registrations, and in the context in which we couldn't acquire the mark through the well-known marks doctrine, as between us, as matters stand, quote, as matters stand today, which is what the Second Circuit said, General Cigar has all the indicia of ownership. It can use the mark and we can't stop them. It has a registration and the district court can't stop them. The Second Circuit never addressed either the OFAC letter, 1996 letter, or 5.527 in terms of whether or not the board is authorized to cancel. It said it's a property transfer. It said it's in violation of the embargo. It's in violation of the embargo because of the judicial limitation. The issue was never argued to them. The government, all the government said in the amicus brief is 515.527 authorizes cancellation. Didn't say by the district court. We never argued by the district court because it doesn't authorize by the district court. In that one place, General Cigar is wrong. The concurrent powers, the general concurrent powers to cancel between the courts and the board are not the same. And therefore, all the ownership discussion is not necessary to the judgment. If you took it all out, if you deleted...
Okay, Mr. Goldstein, thank you. I think we're going beyond the...
I appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.